We started Oceans with the idea that founders really need the right support. And we thought that they need mentorship. We thought that they needed hands-on support. That's still true. Where we were wrong is the idea that mentorship values and would be something that we could trade in a sense. Founders, they want dollars. They want investment. And they want that with ideally support. They don't just want mentorship.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to season two of the Girls Into VC podcast. I hope you're all doing well, especially as we're getting through this semester. Girls Into VC is the first organization dedicated to increasing the number of women in venture capital. We are forming a pipeline of talented and motivated young women ready to enter VC with the educational resources and mentorship we provide. My name is Kritika Jain, and I'm your podcast host. Today, I'm interviewing Sarah Barrett, founding team member of Oceans. Founded in 2018, Oceans is a venture capital firm based in New York and invests in pre-seed and seed stage companies with tech at the core and a focus on future of work. They're especially focused on helping founders create a great team to bring their game-changing ideas to life. Prior to joining Oceans, Sarah spent 17 years at various tech startups, serving in client-facing, operational, and strategic roles before joining Oceans in 2018. She spent 9 years at Clear Forest, a natural language processing software company acquired by Thomson Reuters, running engagements with Fortune 500 and other prominent companies, leading all client relationship management and internal coordination efforts. And most recently, she ran strategic partnerships and product development for the Harmony Institute, an incubator and research lab that studies the interaction of media, society, and the emergence of culture. Without further ado, I'm pleased to welcome Sarah Barrick, founding team member of Oceans. Welcome, Sarah.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me. I'm excited to chat.
Yeah, me too. So just to catch our listeners up, can you share your background and your career path with us?
Absolutely. So I think what drove me to all the roles I've ever had was the desire to work with good people and be able to learn things and do things I got excited about. So thankfully, that didn't lead me to, you know, things that were not promising. But I always wanted to solve a problem. And so that started out at an emerging market securities firm. So my first job out of college was figuring out how to digitize research reports. So, you know, analysts, they write reports and, you know, represent what they think a company or an industry will look like. In the past, portfolio managers and anybody making investment decisions would have stacks of these reports and they'd have to read through them. And that sounds archaic and nutty. So we digitized that and we developed a system to actually distribute those research reports. And that was sort of before email was as prevalent. Mm-hmm. It was really a new innovative way, which sounds crazy, you know, 1,000 years later of doing things. So started out that way and then also realized that investor relations is interesting. So bridging the gap between a company and Wall Street was a fascinating area. You know, how does a company present itself and what is appealing for investors to know? So then that led me to another company of actually the idea of working at startups. So I was in investor relations, bridging that gap, and then went directly to startups. And what got me so excited is working with teams that are building things and have this incredible vision to change the world and accomplish what they're doing, which are these, you know, big challenges that they are uniquely focused on doing. So got really lucky to be able to translate what customers were asking for and what their businesses needed or what they thought their businesses needed would add value, and also eng teams to actually deliver on that. And as, you know, crazy as it seems, people don't speak the same languages all the time. You know, people speak technical, they speak business, they speak investor, they speak founder, it's all different. And I think understanding that and bridging that gap was something that I really loved because it was like solving puzzles and solving problems. So eventually got to Oceans, which, you know, we can go into in a little bit. But one of the things that I think has helped me is always wanting to learn something new and open to it and taking risks. You know, it's hard to start a new job. It's hard to leave something that seems good and take a risk to try something else. But that's the only way to grow. That's the only way to learn. And you know, what's interesting is that some fits aren't always good. You know, not everything is a great decision. It might seem like it's a good fit at a certain time, but for whatever reason, it doesn't work. And I think understanding that and having a little grace about it is just as important as when you're in a great situation and you do everything you can to learn from it. Because sometimes, you know, learning about what isn't ideal really helps you fine tune what is ideal and what's motivating to you and helps you realize what is so important.
I think one thing that's interesting that you brought up, and it's kind of a pattern I'm seeing, in the career paths of like all the other venture capitalists I've talked to, a lot of them have talked about the importance of intellectual curiosity. And a lot of them have like switched a lot of like jobs or companies. They've gone from like startups to VCs. And I think that just speaks to the importance of like having a diverse and like well-rounded career path just to get that like diversity of experiences and perspectives.
Absolutely. With anything, it's important to see things. If you're arguing with somebody about anything or having a discussion, you need to see things from all angles. And I think, you know, as you just said about these career paths, like understanding the different motivations, understanding, you know, sometimes people have a perception, for example, that sales, like, what are they really doing? They're not in the office. They're whatever. That's really important. It's really hard. And, you know, salespeople are like, why can't this engineer just like build it? I don't get it. Truth is, you need to see all different sides of it because there's so many nuances and so many challenges within each role. And so having the ability to see it from different angles, I think is so important and really look at things holistically.
For sure. For sure. So can you tell us like how working in the startup world was different from working at a big company and then how it compares to working in BC?
Sure. I mean, it's funny, you know, some people are meant for startups and some people are meant for big companies. And I don't think that's a good thing or a bad thing, but I think it's a really important thing to know about yourself. You know, startups, there's often a lot more flexibility in growth and you actually can affect change because you can, you know, say there are 5 people or 10 people or even 50 people, you could walk into somebody's office and say, hey, this is what I want to do. Let's do it. Let's try. I mean, assuming you make a good case for yourself, let's try. And something could be affected, you know, a roadmap could be altered. A customer account can change, you know, a strategic direction you can actually affect. In a larger company, it's harder to do that because it's just so much more complex. There's often different decision-making. So it's challenging. And I think some people really are okay with ambiguity, which is sometimes really hard for others. And other people really value stability and knowing what's going to happen the next day and the next year. And the, I would say the safety of job security. Not that large companies are always very safe and stable, but there's a difference in fluctuations. But, you know, for me, I'm a startup person. I love the excitement and the risk and the challenge and that things always change. You know, the problem I'm solving today is different from the problem I'll solve, you know, next month. And to me, that's really exciting because as we talked about before, I love change. I love to learn and I'm curious about things. For others, it's really scary and that's okay. You know, on the flip side, startups, once I was at a company called ClearForest and we were acquired by Thomson Reuters, which is a massive, you know, thousands and like tens of thousands of people. And one of the first things I realized was the end of the quarter and the end of the year, I wasn't worried about making numbers. You know, I didn't have to worry about that. I didn't internalize it. I wasn't on, you know, supposedly taking winter break and worried about making numbers because it didn't matter. Not that it doesn't matter the job that you do, but there's a lot more cushion and there's a lot more, there's a little less at stake at times. There's always something at stake, but in terms of a company surviving, you're not going to make it or break it on one quarter. That was very different, you know, and when I was at ClearForce or all these companies, I always had customers that were large companies and I would be, you know, we'd be trying to go through the process, trying to put things into production, whatever it was. And they could not understand why it took so much time for approvals, for decisions to happen. And then I was extremely humbled working at a large company, realizing that there's so many processes and there are checkpoints and those checkpoints are there for a reason. I just think it's a question of like what really excites you and where you feel comfortable and where you can be your best self.
Do you feel like working in BC is kind of a happy medium between the both? Like, how does it compare?
I think it depends on the VC. I think it could be anything you want it to be. So some VCs are really large companies and very structured and, you know, very established. Others, like we are a startup. So we are, Oceans is a VC, but we are a startup. It, you know, none of us were fund managers before. Oceans didn't exist before. We didn't spin out from something else. So there's a lot in common in terms of being very cost effective in terms of needing to be very focused and trying to, you know, there's not a lot of fat, there's not a lot of wiggle room. Got to try things and make it work because it's a lot on the line.
So can you tell us more about like what it was like starting up Oceans as a founding team member and what inspired you to do so?
So what inspired me were the people, the team. So there are 5 of us partners, but it's really 3 people who started it. And one of those people, his name is Josh, is somebody I've known for a really long time, like on a personal level. And I always watched his career. He was early days at Facebook. He'd been in a lot of interesting roles before that. and has this extraordinary ability to make sense out of what I think is like are just data points. And he can really see into the future and really understands good market well. So when he had this idea to start it, I was like, sign me up. I don't care. Like, I don't care what I'll be doing. I was excited to be able to build something new and to start it from scratch and to think about how we want it to be. And that's really important to me because I think, you know, being authentic and really understanding who each of us is important to being happy and important to doing your best job and having, you know, your voice heard. So that was really exciting to me. And we started it because, you know, it's so important for startups to have the right support. And, you know, being at startups and all of us have, you know, been operators. So people, you know, doing all these jobs, we had a really, really strong firsthand understanding of how hard it is to be a founder and how it feels like the weight of the world is on your shoulders. And sometimes it's the most exhilarating thing and other days it's the most terrifying thing. And I think that's what really sets us apart, that we have the expertise, we've been there and done it. And, you know, having that empathy that being a founder is a hard and lonely job. I think that sets us apart.
You actually kind of transitioned into my follow-up question on that. How was like being an operator in the past? How did that help you? And like, were there any other past experiences that really helped you build Oceans?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I think, you know, having, there's so many things, like having really tried to tease out the voice of the customer and understand how to be so customer focused. And sometimes what customers say is their challenge is not always what they're worried about or isn't always going to affect change. So really trying to understand that and tease that out. That's just as important, you know, now with founders, understanding their customers, also understanding another customer is an investor, right? So how are they going to raise money? So all of those experiences have helped tremendously. Also, you know, always been in operational roles. So the idea of process and having just enough process is important. Too much, it feels heavy and it's not usable. Too little, people don't really know where the guardrails are. So having experiences, you know, working with customers, designing solutions, managing eng teams, all these software tools, knowing what's like a waste of time and what to focus on has always been tremendously helpful to me.
I'm sure starting Oceans had its set of challenges. So I was just wondering, like, what could you share like some of those like challenges or failures you faced and what did you learn throughout the process of starting it?
Sure. That's a good question. So there are always challenges, right? Like, I don't think any of us would be honest if we said it was always easy, or maybe we're not trying hard enough. So yes, there are challenges. One of them, we started Oceans with the idea that founders really need the right support. And we thought that they need mentorship. We thought that they needed hands-on support. That's still true. Where we were wrong is the idea that mentorship values and would be something that we could trade in a sense. Founders, they want dollars. They want investment. Right. And they want that with ideally support. They don't just want mentorship. So understanding that, you know, they needed money. They didn't just need advice. Ideally, they get both. But that obviously the capital is really important to them is something that we had to adjust. I think another thing, which is probably in all of our lives, if we're taking enough risks, is that it's hard to hear no. You know, there were a lot of people that said, no, you know, we don't invest in first-time fund managers, or you need more of a track record, or how can you do this? Like, what do you know about this? Mm-hmm. And we learned from that. So anybody who said no, we stopped and we said, okay, is that like valid feedback? Like, can we understand? It's always valid, but is there something in there that we can learn from and adjust? Or is it something that it may be unconventional, but we have conviction in and we know it's right. And I think we're somewhere in the middle. Like, we've always had a lot of conviction in helping founders and helping them on this journey. And that's never changed.
I'm curious to know, when you were getting those no's, specifically about like your track record and not being a fund manager before, how did you navigate that?
Good question. So we would, because all of us have had experience, you know, building companies and being part of venture-backed companies and just in this ecosystem, we could point to a lot of experiences where we have affected change and where we have had success and where we were able to, you know, accomplish things. And the expertise of knowing go-to-market or how to hire people and, you know, the right teams, that doesn't go away. So I think the people who our story resonated with really get that. And it's the same thing for founders, you know, like founders pitching us, there will be some things that works for a certain investor and not for others. And I think it's the same thing. It's like finding product market fit. In this case, it's investor fit.
Mm-hmm. So kind of on that note, and you've talked about this quite a bit already, but what do you believe truly makes Ocean stand out from the other VCs?
So we really wanted to, we know that being a founder is a hard and lonely job. We know that it's not reasonable that everybody knows everything. And actually, I think if they think they do, they're totally wrong, right? Because there's always something new to learn. So having that appreciation that founders need support, and it doesn't mean they're weak or, you know, too vulnerable or whatever, is something that we really understand. And so helping them build, that's why we invest in early stage. So pre-seed and seed is when the right foundations are being built, the right foundation so that you have the right team, you have the right culture, you have something that, you know, isn't going to spiral out because people have bad behavior. You have, you're trying to focus on the drivers of the business. And we care about that a lot. And I think our founders know that a lot. Not everybody, somebody could be a great engineer and they could have this passion about something, but they may not know how to hire. And we want to help them through that and do it for founders. But we help them understand the levers. We walk them through the process. We help them sometimes like a candidate. There are lots of things that we can do to support them without actually doing it for them all the time, because they need to learn, just like all to learn these things. But I do believe that that sets us apart significantly. We have founders who call us empathetic capital. And you know, it's not just dollars. We started Oceans because we knew that founders need capital, but they also oftentimes need support in areas that they either don't have the expertise in, or sometimes they just don't want to worry about. They want to focus their attention on other things. And I respect that awareness.
So on this positive note, can you share a success story at Ocean?
Oh my God. There are a lot of them. I'm proud to say, and happy to say there are a lot of them. I think one of them actually just happened yesterday. So this is great timing. We have two funds, and our first fund, we were writing smaller checks and really just, you know, participating in rounds. Our second fund, we're leading and co-leading. So these are larger checks. Yesterday I spoke with a founder who we invested in our first fund, who we're now investing in again in his second company. So idea that this founder thought that we added enough value, that he wanted us on the cap table again, and thought that, you know, what we were doing, the way that we supported founders really resonated with him, meant the world to me, because it's that we're doing something right. You know, it's not easy, even though it's really hard for founders to raise money. Sometimes it's really hard. It is hard for investors to participate in the deals they really want to. It's competitive. And that founder chose us twice. So the first time, you know, is one. The second time is really with intention. And that makes me proud. Another success, I would say, and there are lots of them. It's like, you know, if you ever ask a parent if they have a favorite child, you know, that's like a crazy question. You, I know, you have no siblings, so it's easy for your parents. For us, you know, it's the same thing. And we had an event over the summer where we brought in subject matter experts, in this case, a PR person and a finance and accounting person, to have sessions with our founders. And, you know, those two experts were phenomenal. But what made me really excited and really proud, and I smile thinking about it right now, is that the founders who were in those sessions listened to the experts, but then they were helping each other. They said, you know what? Try this. I did that and it didn't work. Don't ever do that. And they shared their experiences, and they were vulnerable. They were helpful. They were collaborative. They were open to feedback. They were sharing their experiences to benefit others. You know, they had the compassion and understanding that, like, it is a hard job and want to help somebody else. And the fact that we are able to build that community, that we're able to, like, engender that, makes me really, really proud of, I think, how we are as investors and how we operate, how we are as humans, but how we are as investors and how we are with our portfolio companies.
Yeah. And I think that speaks to the term you coined, empathetic investing. I really like that. It's cool to see that your, like, ideology and values are, like, trickling down to your investors as well. And then you're able to form that community. So that's, like, really inspiring.
Thank you. It means a lot to us. You know, it's why we do this. Like, you know, a lot of, obviously everybody wants to see great returns. You know, we invest in companies that we think are going to kill it. Right. And we think are going to make a lot of money for our LPs and for us. But we also invest in people and in teams. And those people have to have remarkable ideas, but also have to be really great team members. They have to know how to attract talent. They have to treat people the way that you know, we like to be treated. Mm-hmm. And I think that that does affect who we're with and the culture that we have. And that's something I think we all feel really proud of, because it's not always easy to foster.
Mm-hmm, for sure. I have one last question about oceans.
Sure.
So I was looking at the website and I saw that they invest in companies that are called quote unquote future of work companies. I was just curious if you could explain that term a little bit more. And then also, are you seeing any trends in the pitches you're getting given the rise of AI?
Sure. Okay, so future of work first. That is a term that is confusing and it means so much to so many different people. Mm-hmm. To us, it means how will people collaborate and work differently, given, you know, we might be in different geolocations, different, you know, using different tools. So for us, it means how we could collaborate and enable teams to collaborate. It also means reinventing legacy processes. Like there are some things that are just old school and are done a certain way, but could really benefit from a revamp, could benefit from technology to accelerate certain parts of the business, to optimize and to create efficiencies where there haven't been. Low code, no code is also a big part of that. And for me, that's particularly exciting because I'm not a technical person. And the idea that I can actually build a website or build a database or look at data or do things that were generally reserved for technical people is really liberating and exciting. And you mentioned this earlier about what the like overarching theme about curiosity. And what leads people to different jobs. I think it has been able to fuel and enable me to try different things that I didn't even know that I liked. You know, I wasn't exposed to them earlier in my career or at a younger age to develop those skills. And it's really exciting. So future of work includes a lot of those things like business process improvement, reinventing legacy systems, collaborating differently. And you also asked about AI. So AI has been like an accelerant on everything. Mm-hmm. And it's exciting. I mean, AI has been around for a while, so that's a funny thing. And AI is new, right? But AI has been part of like my career, like forever, machine learning, all these things. These are the building blocks to what we have, all of us have participating in the past. Mm-hmm. What I see now is tremendous growth and acceleration. I see students on college campuses who did not have access to tools and techniques and data able to produce amazing things. And to me, that's so inspiring and invigorating. I also see a lack of differentiation. You know, just because somebody makes a chatbot or just because somebody wraps something in AI doesn't mean it's the best product. So I think the ability to differentiate and discern what is really transformational and what will move markets, what will, you know, enable people to do things differently or really transform a business is how that AI is leveraged and architected and, you know, used and differentiated, which also is a big part of it is technical, but a big part of it is go to market. You know, what's the narrative around this? Like what's the community? What are the users? So technology is always one part of it, but how it's leveraged, how it's talked about, how it's adopted is just as critical.
Mm-hmm, for sure. So I want to pivot the conversation a little bit more and talk about D&I. So you worked in fields in VC and finance. These are still traditionally male dominated. So can you touch on what it was like for you to work in these fields at the time, especially in finance, because you worked in it? That was like one of your first jobs. And then along with that, was there anything that helped you thrive in these fields?
I think about this a lot, and I think about how there's been so much change, which makes me really, really happy and also makes me a little bit sad, to be honest. So, you know, I did not have a lot of women role models in my job, and that's a shame. You know, I feel like I really could have looked up to and learned from people. Luckily, I had role models who were men, you know, role models, good characters and people I learned from, but there was a dearth of female role models. And unfortunately at the time, a lot of there were very few women in tech. So they may have been in positions or roles that I did not identify with or, you know, really understand, or they may have been engaging and acting in a way that like I didn't identify with either because of like old stereotypes and things like that. So I think now I'm so happy to see that there's so many more women and there's so many more, you know, people to look up to, however you identify, whether it's like because of role or because of gender or because of anything or interest, there's so many more role models. So what I did is I learned from the people who I just considered good people in my life, like my grandma, my mom's mom. I learned both of my grandparents, grandmas, I learned a lot from. But, you know, the idea of speaking your mind and having conviction and, you know, being really true to yourself and having strong ethics and values, like those are things you can learn from anybody. And those are things that, in my opinion, carry through to the work we do. So while I didn't have role models, like in the traditional sense of like people who I saw doing the job I wanted, who were female, I had a lot of really strong women in my life, whether they were family members or teachers or just, you know, people around me that I felt really lucky enough to have learned from, and then eventually developed a community of mentors and role models who were, you know, peers that I could learn a lot from. So the idea of having a community of people you can be vulnerable with and share things with, and realize that people are just as scared or just as clueless or just as nervous about something. And it just takes one person to say, oh my God, like really worried about this. And then everybody opens up. And, you know, as interesting as it is, I see the same thing with parenting. Like we're talking about work, but I see the same models and the same behavior in every arena in my life. That you know, there are people who you could look up to. There are people you can, you know, share with, and everything is easier and more fun actually when you do it with people you trust and people you learn from, people who you know are supportive and have your back.
Yeah. I think it always comes back to the point of just like community and how important and supportive a community can be. So it's great to see that there are so many more communities now in these traditionally male dominated fields that are there to support you regardless of how you identify.
Yeah. I also think that people have adjusted, you know, like I think back to how I communicate, like I have a lot of strong opinions and a lot of conviction, but I realize, and this is like a recent thing, I realize I share it differently in different situations. I have more confidence to speak earlier, to speak with more ferocity and conviction in certain situations than others. And I think I'm super grateful. Like my partners right now know that sometimes I think I have to marinate a bit and then I think, and they know that different people, you know, there's value in diversity and that there's value in understanding that people communicate differently. And it's not always the person who's like pushing through the Zoom to say, I got it. And like always presenting. Sometimes you need to give a little time and space to somebody else who just, you know, needs a little, like, is not going to interrupt, you know, is not going to dominate, is not going for whatever reasons. So I feel really grateful that that has evolved, you know, in the workplace and also grateful that like my partners are really fantastic and, you know, really understand that there are times when I take a little bit more time to think and to share and other times I dig right in.
So on the note of community, do you have any favorite memories of a community or a mentor supporting you? You've kind of alluded to this with like your grandparents, but anyone else you want to give a shout out to?
You know, it's so many people. Like it's so many people. It's seeing people take risks. You know, sometimes it's my husband. Right now, you want to know what's really inspiring to me are my kids. I have two boys who are teenagers and they take risks every day and they put themselves out there and are willing to try things. And I think, wow, if they could perform on a stage and like sing and play guitar, like I should be able to do this. And so I actually take a lot from them. I take a lot from the founders we work with, you know, these people who put everything on the line to build this business that they are so passionate about and care so much about and they need to bring to the world. So there's so many people. I take it from everybody around me. I take it from my sister, my friends. I mean, as you said, the value of community. I think that we benefit in different ways from everybody who's around us. And we also have the ability to choose who's around us. And we should choose the right people. We should choose people who lift us up and, you know, recognize our strengths and recognize ways that they can help us. You know, that's just as important.
Yeah. And it's especially interesting when you kind of reflect on seeing like your mentors in your community, like you can find them in the most unconventional ways. Like you wouldn't even think of it. One of my friends, actually, she has been like such a great role model to me. And I literally met her because we were on like the same e-board of an organization. And then we did case competitions together and then we became friends and she inspired me in so many different ways. So it's really cool to see that connection.
It's a gift, right? I mean, I look at all these interactions as a gift and as opportunities to like learn and understand what motivates people and what drives them. And there's a lot of grace in understanding what other people struggle with and what we struggle with and you know, applying that to everyone.
For sure. So we're just going to close out with two more questions. These are more advice for our listeners. So what advice do you have for students and graduates, especially young women who want to break into VC or work in a startup post-grad?
So I think that advice probably falls into two categories. One of them is just how we are. Take risks. You know, you don't get anything if you don't ask for it. And you have to be in it to win it. You know, if you don't put yourself out there, you're never going to know if you could do it. You're never going to get that job. You're never going to have that opportunity. So take risks. Find your own voice. You know, what makes you feel good? Like, how do you feel comfortable presenting it? Because when you speak, when each of us speaks authentically and feels confident, there's nothing that can stop you. So like find where that is and who appreciates it. Also ask for help. You know, it's so, so important to ask for help. And that could be, you know, you want to work at a certain company and you know somebody who works there and like you ask them, or you see somebody who has a role that you're curious and you want to learn about, ask them. Like, it never hurts. So those are probably like the character building ones, like, you know, authentic, being authentic and always helping people. You know, we all struggle, and like having that grace again to like see what you could do to help other people is so important. In terms of actually finding jobs, I think being an operator is really important. So you know, having a role and developing expertise and really knowing something inside and out, it could be product management, it could be sales, it could be, you know, customer, you know, working with customers, it could be so many different things, it could be eng, whatever it is. Doing it, like become an expert in it, have an opinion about it, know, you know, the newest techniques and latest things in whatever it is. That's really, really important because those skills and that perspective, I think, is tremendously helpful in VC, because otherwise you're looking at a company and saying, well, it looks good on paper. You know, like anybody could be a financial like jockey and look at just anybody, but you could, most people could be, and like look at something and say, oh yeah, that could make money. But understanding what the levers are of the business, understanding what could make or break something, and that could be because of a role. It could also be about expertise in a certain area. Like maybe somebody's a, you know, a consumer product like expert and really understands adoption and understands what gets a certain segment to use a product. That is valuable expertise as well. It's just a question of like how you apply it. And I think, you know, the last thing I would say about it is to be open-minded. You know, sometimes we have, you know, these immediate reactions to things based on assumptions or based on other things. So I would say be open-minded and recognize that some positions may be stepping stones. They may be a means to an end. And, you know, as long as you're learning something, as long as you're working with good people who you can learn from and who support you, you know, you probably get really far. So I don't know if that was specific enough.
I think you covered a lot, and everything you said was great advice. So it was great advice. and one last question. How can students find mentors or a community to support them as they begin their careers?
That's a really good question. You know, like a little secret about most people is that nobody knows what they're doing, really. So keep that in mind and you know, use that as a way to think about asking for help. So for example, and a lot of people do, people reach out to me, they may reach out on LinkedIn and say, hey, I saw you had this role, I want to learn more about it, or I had this experience, or even founders that pitch us and they're not a fit for us, but we still maintain a relationship. And I care really deeply about helping female founders, about helping young women, because I did not have the benefit of a lot of mentors and a lot of people around me. I did in different ways, but you know, not specifically like people who looked like me and acted like me.
Right.
And the value of that. So what I would say is when you reach out to people, do reach out to people, even if they're strangers, ask them for specific help, because most people really want to help. Most people just don't know how. So if somebody reached out to me and said, hey, I see that you're connected with this person, like, can you help me get to them? I would say, of course. If somebody said, hey, I'm interested in something, but it felt very vague, it's harder for me to take action. So if somebody gives me a job to do and says, help me in this way, I would do it. So, you know, I think it's really important to ask for help. And it could be student organizations. It could be volunteering for something. It could be a pitch competition. I mean, it sounds like you made a really good friend that way. It could be lots of different ways of just connecting with people and learning about what they do. And sometimes you never know who that person is or who their family is or who their friends are, what their experience is. And they are like the key to unlocking something really tremendous. So take risks, ask for help. And people usually will give it. And if they don't, you know, it's their loss, but more people will than won't.
I think one thing that is very similar to what you're saying is also kind of just advocating for yourself and telling people what you're doing. Because again, as you said, like you don't know what people are interested in, where their connections are. And even if you just mentioned something like, oh, I'm really interested in this, I'm working on this, like they could lead you to a new opportunity. So I've kind of seen that unfold in front of my eyes, and it's always so cool to see that happen.
That's such a good point. And honestly, I'm the worst at selling myself, like the worst, right? So another really big, piece of advice I would say is to really, be proud of and recognize what you do and what you're great at and those gifts, and to not take them for granted. What comes easily to you or to me may not come easily to somebody else. And like really owning that and feeling proud of it, that's something that, like, I think historically, young women my age, like, weren't always encouraged to do, sort of quieter and meeker. And really encouraged to see, people standing up for themselves and saying, this is what I'm good at, and being seen and demanding the attention. And I think that's so important. So you're right. You're totally right. It's a good point.
All right. Well, that wraps up our time together. But thank you so much again, Sarah, for coming on the podcast and sharing all your great insights, advice, stories, anecdotes. It was so great having you on. I really enjoyed speaking with you.
Thank you. I loved it, and I appreciate the great questions, and it's been so thought-provoking, and I learned a lot today too. So
Oh, I'm
I really appreciate it. Every single interaction,
glad.
it's really amazing. And if anybody wants to reach out, if there's anything that I could do, like, ask, please ask, because you never know unless you try.
Yeah, and we wish you all the best with your future endeavors at Oceans, with the community, founders, partners, everyone. We wish you the very best.
Thank you, thank you. And really, again, love what you all are doing. I think it's so important to show girls and women, whatever the right word is, these opportunities. So thank you.
Yeah, and a thank you to our listeners for tuning into this week's podcast and supporting Girls Into VC. Make sure to check out our website, girlsintovc.com, and follow us on our social media at Girls Into VC. Join us every other Wednesday to hear from female venture capitalists, entrepreneurs, innovators, and advocates about their career paths and lessons they have learned along the way. See you next time.